But they probably immediately were like, well, no, you don't understand. It's true, I promise. And they probably went kind of through an elaborate, you know, explanation of why you should believe what they just said. They probably said different things, and they were kind of trying to convince you, right, that what they said was true. Now, what I've learned, though, is those three powerful words, when they're used, they're usually followed by another powerful statement. It's called prove it. You know what I mean? Now, that statement's kind of a challenge, isn't it? Doesn't it kind of seem that way? Like, all right, prove it, you know? But I actually don't see it as a challenge. I kind of see it as an open door. And you know what I mean? It's someone telling you that right now, I don't believe what you just said. I don't. What you told me, I don't believe, but go ahead and try to convince me. Present your evidence, and then, you know, we'll see. But what it means, though, if someone is willing to say to me, prove it, I see that as an open door, right? Because what they're saying is, you've built enough of a bridge where I'm going to allow you to present your evidence. I'm going to allow you to kind of try and convince me that what you've just said is true. Now, the problem is though, I've learned that we live in a world full of skeptics. Have you noticed that? I mean, so many people promise the truth, don't they? Everyone kind of considers themselves an expert. Everyone is now an expert. I mean, they believe that kind of all you got to do is you just do a quick Google search, right? Find a couple articles, and now you are now an expert. You can tell people what's true and what isn't. And you know how dangerous that is? I mean, considering where they've gotten this information from, I mean, the sources of this expert knowledge. So when someone says something that we don't like, or something we don't agree with, or maybe it's just something new to us, we've never heard it before, we usually don't believe it, right? We doubt it. And sometimes it's not even based on evidence. It's just, you know, we just don't believe it. We may even do a quick Google search ourselves just to kind of check. And when we do it, have you learned that we usually search in a way that kind of proves what we want to believe? You know what I mean? It's like someone said, I don't believe that. Well, let me look it up and find all the articles that basically agree with me, you know? Because, if it's on the internet, it's true, right? Well, actually, have you ever heard the term fake news? Right. No, I mean, so we find articles that are on Facebook, right? Or maybe they're sent to us an email or other social media. And they make these pretty large claims on different topics, right? And if we agree with it, we don't even check it out to make sure it's true. I mean, in our minds, that's got to be true. And so what do? We like it. We probably share it. We probably send it on its way to other people because it obviously must be true. I mean, how many of you have heard of the places like Snoops.com? Basically, these are sites on the internet, and you know their only purpose is to show you what's true and what isn't. They literally, it's a site full of different things that show what emails or things on Facebook are true and aren't true. That's literally all it does. You go there, and they will spend time telling you, no, that is not true. And they'll actually give you real sources of where you find, you know, no, that was made up. I mean, and that's the thing is, we live in a world that's full of lies. And these are things that people intentionally made up with their sole purpose is to confuse and trick you to believe something that isn't true. And trust me, they had an agenda of why they did it. I mean, look, if anyone's willing, how many of you are willing to admit that you ever sent something out that someone else then immediately replied and said, that's fake? Okay, so only one person was willing to admit that. So should it shock us that when most people doubt, or at least are very skeptical about the different things that they hear, should that shock us at all? I mean, some of you may say, no, Pastor, that's actually a good thing because, you know, it becomes harder to fool people if you become skeptical. I mean, I guess there's maybe some truth to that, right? I mean, because if you're willing to spend the time and actually research and figure out, because you're skeptical about it, if you know, you're going to spend the time to find out, you're probably less likely to be fooled, right? The problem is are people really willing to spend the time to find out if something's true? No, they're not. They find kind of, you know, opinions that they want to hear, and they agree with them. Or they have like that one news source that they like, that they agree with, right? Because we all have our one news source, and whatever they say has to be true, right? It's dangerous, isn't it? Well, this morning I'm here to tell you that I believe it's okay to have doubts. I do. I have them. You have them. Whether you're willing to admit them or not, you have doubts. I want to spend kind of the next few weeks talking about our doubts. I want to look at what is a doubt. I want to look at what is truth. I want to then kind of go through the Bible, and I want to pick out different examples in the Bible of when people had doubts in the Bible. Because if you read through it, that happened actually more often than you realize. And then I want to show you how they responded to their doubts, but I also want to show you how God responded to their doubts. And I think if we really look at those, you'll kind of see that what you should do, I guess, with your doubts. Now, let's look at our key scripture for this series. This, the key verse I want us to always kind of keep in the front of our minds, good one to memorize if you haven't already, is John 14, verse 6. John 14, verse 6. Now, I'll have the scriptures behind me if you want to just follow along. I don't have the scriptures behind me. Eventually, I will have the scriptures behind me. And if not, you should have brought your Bible. So John chapter 14, verse 6. It says, Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, we may have doubts, but we stand on the fact that Jesus is the truth. He is the way. He is the life. And if we put our faith and trust in Jesus, we won't have to be defined by our doubts, but actually we will be defined by our relationship with Jesus, who is the truth. So let's just break it down. So what is doubt? What is doubt? I actually looked that up in Webster's dictionary. So Webster defines doubt as to call into question the truth of, to be uncertain, a lack of confidence or distrust. Matter of fact, the opposite of doubt is to be certain. You have confidence. You have no questions. You have trust in it. Now, doubt isn't fear. It isn't. Because fear is when you have kind of a strong emotional response because you found out, or maybe you believe danger is coming. That's what fear is. You found out or you believe it's coming. I mean, we fear things that have happened to us before, right? We also fear things that have never happened to us before, right? Fear is rarely logical. The reason why it's logical is we're afraid of something that hasn't happened yet. That's what fear is. And honestly, it may never happen. But when we doubt something, that's different. It's usually because we don't have enough evidence. Think of it almost this way. It's almost like a scale. We have this scale, and we have our doubts, and we have our evidence. And when the evidence is greater than our doubts, we believe it, right? But when our doubts are greater than our evidence, we doubt it. So we doubt something based on evidence or lack of evidence. Now, is that bad? I mean, is it okay to doubt something? Well, kind of yes and no. I mean, I know you're a pastor, that's a terrible answer. I mean, my kids always hated that when I gave them like a yes and no answer. Well, here, think of it this way. Let's say you received an email from someone in Africa who said they have a $12 million inheritance check for you. Should you believe it? Or how about this? Should you doubt it when you read a promise of God in the Bible? See what I mean? It's kind of not that straightforward, is it? I mean, but doubt has the ability to save your life, though, doesn't it? See, doubt will keep you off thin ice. Literally, off thin ice. My dad used to take these huge rocks and throw them in the middle, and if it didn't, then we could go on it. Look, doubt will keep you from drinking expired milk, right? Doubt will stop you from buying that great bridge that's for sale. See, doubt stops you from doing things that your logical mind's like, what are you doing, right? But you know what I've also learned? Doubt has the ability to cause your life to come to a standstill. Completely. I mean, what if you can't trust anyone? It could be as simple as, what if you doubt that you're smart enough to go to college? Or what if, it could be anything that you doubt either about yourself or the people around you. See, but we need to understand what doubt is. We need to know, not only know how to remove unhealthy doubt from us, but we need to be able to help those that we're in relationship with who may have very similar doubts to what we have. That's our job, right? Is to be able to help each other. So what I want to do this morning is that I'm going to look at a Bible example of doubt. So why don't you turn with me to Mark chapter 9? Just turn to Mark chapter 9. My hope is, really through this sermon series, is I want to look at different examples in the Bible where people had doubt. I mean, some of them had really good reasons in their mind to doubt. I mean, they were either asked really hard questions or they faced really difficult situations and doubt came into play. I mean, they were confronted with just things that, you know, and in each one of these situations, they either had the choice to either believe or not believe. But see, if we learn from how they were able to handle that, like I said, it's going to help us in our own life because you're going to face doubt. It's not an if. You're going to face doubt. So you're there? Mark chapter 9? All right. So starting in verse 14, it says, "And when he came to the disciples, he saw a great multitude around them, and the scribes disputing with them. Immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed, and running to him greeted him. And he asked the scribes, 'What are you discussing with them?' Then one of the crowd answered and said, 'Teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, but they could not.'" Now, what we don't read is where the story starts. Now, the story actually starts, and look, read that during the rest of this week. Read the whole chapter 9, okay? And you'll see that Jesus is coming down from the Mount of Transfiguration with Peter, James, and John. He's been up there. It's actually a cool story. Read that part, you know, the rest of this week. So he's coming down the mountain with the three disciples. Up ahead, he sees the other nine. And he sees the scribes kind of arguing with them. There's a fight going on. And so he comes down. The people see Jesus, and they basically ignore the other nine disciples, and they come running over to Jesus. And they're like, "Look, we have a problem here. We brought it to your disciples, and they couldn't do anything." So they're like, "All right, Jesus, we need your help." Now, the problem was that one of the people there had a son that needed to be healed. Disciples couldn't do it. Now, it shouldn't surprise us, though, that they went to the disciples for healing. Because, look, during that time, things spread through word of mouth pretty quick. And, look, The disciples and Jesus were known to have healing follow them wherever they went. And it wasn't just Jesus. It was actually the disciples as well. So what they were basically upset about was that, look, we've seen the evidence in the past that when people need something, you just go to the disciples or to you and healing happens. Now, we know the disciples themselves were given the ability to do it. So stay in Mark 9. I'm just going to read you one verse. If you go back three chapters, in Mark chapter 6, the one verse says this, and he called the 12 to himself, and he began to send them out two by two and gave them the power over unclean spirits. So we know that three chapters earlier, Jesus literally gave the disciples the power to do that. And he said, all right, now go and do that. So trust me, guess what they have been doing for a while now? Exactly what Jesus had asked them to do. They went out two by two and did that. But for whatever reason, they couldn't in this situation. So what was interesting is that it created doubt not only in the mind of the Father who brought his son, but it created doubt in all the different people that were there. Now, the more I read about that, it actually kind of made me sad when I really read the comments of the dad. I mean, what I was hearing him say is that he wanted to believe. He really did. I mean, he had enough trust. I mean, that was based on evidence, right? He had heard the disciples and Jesus. He may have known people that have gotten healed, but he knew that these were the people to go to when you had a problem. He even had additional faith that wasn't even based on evidence. It was just a hope that Jesus or the disciples would be able to take care of his son. I mean, they believed that not only was healing possible, but they believed that Jesus and the disciples wanted them to be healed. So they were disappointed. And wouldn't you have been? They were disillusioned on what's going on here. They were actually put in a position where doubt could grow in their life. It actually kind of made me think, has the church done that to the world? Have we claimed that we believe the Bible, that we believe in a healing God? We ask people to believe those same things, but we've not been able to deliver what we say God has promised. Now, some of you may be thinking, Pastor, well, wait a minute. God never promised to heal everyone, you know, to fix everything, and basically do whatever we've asked him to do. That's true. God hasn't promised that. But I think the problem is we actually haven't been able to communicate that to the people that were around. Plus, I don't think we've been the best at building bridges to them where they actually are willing to receive that evidence from us on what we believe. Because the truth is, people believe what they want to believe, right? You have to earn the ability to present new evidence to people. Or are they going to receive it as true? They're not. Look, we live in a world where everyone is promising everything and delivering almost nothing. It's true. That's what we live in. Matter of fact, why do you think we live in a world full of skeptics? Because we hear all these promises and rarely see those promises being delivered. But we have to break that trend. And that takes time, though, doesn't it? That takes love. That takes commitment. I mean, look how frustrated Jesus gets in verse 19. This is Jesus responding. He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. Now, faithless, that means disbelieving, untrustworthy. Now, are those the type of people that you like to hang out with? No, I don't either. Matter of fact, especially if you're not that way or you're trying to not be that way. Now, whether Jesus is talking to the dad, he could have been. The Bible really doesn't even say who he's talking to when he says this. Jesus kind of says this. And we can't see if he's, you know, looking at dad or looking. But even if he's talking to the dad, you know, the one who had lost his son or his son needed the healing. Or maybe he was saying it to the disciples, right? And he's like, well, the ones who weren't able to actually bring healing to the boy. Or maybe he was saying it to the scribes and the Pharisees, right? The ones that were always trying to find one mess up, you know? They wanted to just find out one time when Jesus or the disciples messed up so they could point it out and show everyone, see, they're fake. But can you imagine just how frustrating it must have been for Jesus? As he's dealing with people. Verse 20. Then they brought him to him. And when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed in him. And he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. He just hears words, you know, if it's possible. You know, if you've got the power, if you're able. Can't you just see the faith inside this man just wanting to have any reason to just come jumping out? He wants to see his son delivered. And look, he's just looking for help. That's all he wants. He's probably like every other person like us in the world. You know, when you're going through something that just you don't understand and you're just looking for something powerful, you're looking for God to show up. Verse 23, Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. Belief, right? So faith, that's really what we're talking about. I mean, Jesus kind of makes a really strong statement of just how powerful faith can be, doesn't he? All things are possible through Jesus if you have the faith to believe. Now, it doesn't say that everything happens the way you want when you believe. Didn't say that though, right? But it does give you the hope, though, right? That when you're willing to put your faith and trust in God, that something starts in the supernatural. Something is started. Something's initiated. It kind of gives hope to the people who need the endurance to keep praying for something. And maybe they've been praying for years just to keep going, to keep believing that with God, all things are possible. Verse 24, immediately the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Cried out with tears. Boy, he was hungry, wasn't he? Wasn't the dad just hungry for it? Look, he recognized the need for faith. He did. He realized he had some faith, right? He realized that. But he also saw that there was some unbelief or faithlessness inside him. And he's like every single one of us, right? When we pray to God, we have some doubt. Look, I want you to understand that you're not alone. Those times in prayer when you cried out to God, you know, when you're wondering where he was, if he was listening, if he was willing, if he had the power, you kind of felt that doubt and unbelief inside you. Kind of embarrassing, isn't it? Let's be honest here. You almost felt like you're betraying God, right? You kind of have any of you ever become kind of worried when that happens? You're like, oh no, I've just totally ruined my prayer. It's now, it can't happen now. Because I doubted. forgive it out, you know, because now I'm like, oh, do I just not pray about that anymore? Because I doubted. So did I just ruin everything? I mean, you're willing to say, I've kind of been there. You know, God might be angry now. He might be disappointed. He may not answer my prayer. No, you're not the only one who feels that way. A father is asking Jesus to help the weakness of his faith with tears, kind of crying out with passion. He's desperate for Jesus to do something, and he's not wanting his doubt to stand in the way. So what does the father do? He goes to the only one that he's sure has the ability to do it. And he says, help me. He removes the mask, kind of exposes his weakness. He admits his failures and says, please help. See, faith isn't the absence of doubt. It's the means to overcome it. See, it's okay to have doubts. Just don't let them be the dead end. Don't allow them to remove your hope. You just have to keep moving forward. Look, the triumph of my faith is not the absence of doubt. It's not. The triumph of my faith is the ability to shine in the deepest and the darkest parts of my life where there are doubts down there, but I'm still willing to put my faith and trust in God, even though they're there. Look, verse 25. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, deaf and dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more. Then the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly, and he came out of him. And he became as one dead. So that many said, he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. Do you realize what just happened there? Jesus healed him even though the father doubted. His doubts didn't disqualify him. Your doubts don't disqualify you. Why? Because every single one of us doubts. God knows that. You think he's shocked? He wants us to admit them and then cry out to him and ask for help. It's okay. You could literally, with tears in your eyes, on your knees, you may look up to heaven and say, I believe, but help my unbelief. You see, we believe because we know what the Bible says. Can I give you a secret? I don't believe the Bible because I don't doubt. Because if you don't doubt, you're not reading it. Or you're reading it, but not with the intent to actually follow it. My doubts are the evidence of my growth. They are. Matter of fact, the closer I get to Jesus, you know what? The more questions I have. Have you noticed that? I want to know him. I want to know everything about him. And look, the closer I get, I begin to see just how deep and how wide his love is for me. And you know what? I don't get it. My mind can't wrap around it. So you know what happens? I doubt it. But you know what? I'm so hungry for it that I dive in deeper. See, you don't let your doubt be the roadblock. You let your doubt bring you forward. You let your doubt say, I know you're true. And so you know what? I gotta know. And you dump both feet in. That's what it is. Because we ask for help because we want to 100% believe in God. We're not satisfied until we get all. So don't hide your doubts. Expose them. Grow from them. Challenge them. God is not angry at your doubts. It's not. Matter of fact, example, as a parent, when my kids doubt me as a parent, I've started to not get angry with them anymore. I don't. look, the truth is, I'm disappointed that I've not been able to show them enough evidence where they can believe what I've said is true. And I actually use that kind of as a reminder to me to try even harder to make sure that the evidence that I supply to them makes it to where they believe what I say. And God doesn't reject us because of our doubt. Matter of fact, God then tries to reinforce to us why we should place our hope and trust in Him. He knows that God knows that faith in Him will not disappoint. God's not worried about the results. He's not. He knows that He's faithful. He knows that His plan is perfect. He knows that He's good. He's not concerned whether you believe Him or not. Now, the interesting thing here is the story ends with the disciples asking Jesus a question. Verse 28. And when He had come into the house, His disciples asked Him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" So He said to them, This kind can come out by nothing but prayer and fasting. You know why I like that? Even His disciples had doubt. Now, did you see Jesus yell at him? Like walk up to Philip, smack him in the back of the head. I gave you the power. Why didn't you just take care of it? No, He didn't do that. So why do you worry or fear or even become embarrassed and hide when you have a doubt? When you do, not if, when you do, bring them to God and ask Him a question. You're allowed to. Lay them down at His feet and just ask for help. Lord, I know that Your word is true. I know that. Help me to believe. What you're doing is you're stretching your faith for more. That's what you're saying. What you're saying is, look, I understand, or maybe I don't understand Your plan. But I know the plan that You have for me is good. We sing that, don't we? All you're really doing is saying, when it comes right down to it, I may doubt You, but I trust You. And really what you're saying is, I want more of You. Aren't you standing? These sermons are going to stretch you. Why? Because I've made the decision not to run from my questions anymore. Because I did. I used to feel really guilty. I don't know about you, but when I questioned God, there was almost something inside me that said, how can you do that? That's God. And then when I became a pastor, it became even worse. Like, you're a pastor. You're not allowed to question God. And it literally... Then what do I do? And then I'm manic depressive, you know what I mean? What am I supposed to do? I still have questions, God. Because the closer I got, the more I saw and the more I was like, well, what is this that I'm seeing now? And then I dove in even deeper and God was even bigger than I thought. And think about this. You have some knowledge of the Bible, right? Picture those who don't. And their questions. Look, I'm going to be hitting things like, why is there evil and suffering in the world? Even just the simple thing of, what is truth? Not simple. I'm telling you, these are the ones you want to bring people to who don't really know God very well. Because I'm going to hit questions where there really is no great answer for.